You're now locked in to HBCU Pulse. We're the number one outlet for HBCU life, talking about everything that's important to our culture, from on-campus issues to politics and what's trending on the yard. We always keep that same energy. Don't touch that dial. You're listening to HBCU Pulse Radio.
What's going on, everybody? This is Randall Barnes, the founder of HBCU Pulse and the host of HBCU Pulse Radio, in the building for another special edition of the show on today, where I always say that we have a special edition of the show today, but we really do, because we have a Grammy-nominated R&B artist that's worked with J. Cole on his latest project, which a lot of folks have been talking about, Might Delete Later. Also, she's worked with Alicia Keys, the Alicia Keys that performed at the Super Bowl with Usher. I'm talking about Miss Davion. She's a Georgia girl. She's in Georgia making it happen, living in Atlanta. Got the opportunity to connect with her. She's doing a lot of amazing things, and she has a new EP out called Good Grief, which is a very deep R&B project, full of emotions, full of good stories. And anybody that's listened, that's been in relationship stuff and that's been dealing with grief, you really can relate to it. And Davion is such a great, cool person. She did not go to an HBCU, but she has a really interesting HBCU connection. Her sister went to Albany State University. Now, if y'all know the HBCU lore of HBCU athletics, you know that Fort Valley State University, my HBCU, and Albany State University have an intense rivalry on who's the real blue and gold. Now listen, Albany wins those football games. I must admit, we got to get our win back. But it's all love, though. It is. And I had to tease her a little bit about it. And I know her sister's listening. Shout out to her sister. Listen, Fort Valley State, Albany State, Savannah State, it's all love. We're all family because we're all a part of the University System of Georgia, the only three public HBCUs in the state of Georgia. So we all stick together. It's all love. And I got a lot of love for Albany State. And shout out to her sister for really putting her on to HBCU life. And we talked about a lot of amazing things. Now, I did try to pitch some Fort Valley to her, though I had to, because I asked her, like, hey, what HBCU would you consider attending? And I said, you can say Fort Valley if you want to. You can say Fort Valley because you fit right in at Fort Valley, performing at the amphitheater, performing at the talent show at the Golden Lounge. We talked a little bit about that, but we also talked about grief. We talked about therapy. We talked about songwriting. And we also talked about how HBCU artists can make it in the industry. You can hear the whole entire interview on HBCU Pulse YouTube and also HBCU Pulse Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, wherever you get your podcasts. Because I assure you, you don't want to miss this interview, because Davion is next up, I'm telling you. So make sure to stay tuned. Coming up next is my conversation with Davion. You're listening to HBCU Pulse Radio.
From the shade room to your news feed, we brag different. You're locked into HBCU Pulse, now trending worldwide.
What's going on, everybody? This is Randall Barnes, the founder of HBCU Pulse and host of HBCU Pulse Radio. Listen, this is a big time interview. Like, if you watching this on YouTube, I'm here looking like I'm the host of 106 and Park out here, man. Like, it's crazy. Like, I got a big time artist in the building. We don't get these opportunities like this normally, so I had to step up. Haircut, beard looking good, Howard University jacket on, making it happen. I got Grammy nominated R&B artist Davion in the building from Georgia. How you doing, Davion?
I'm feeling amazing. I feel like that girl. That was great. Thank you.
Come on, you are that girl. Listen, they be playing with us. Like, you are from Georgia. You say you from Augusta?
I'm from Augusta. Yeah, I was born in Hinesville, Georgia, raised in Augusta, Georgia. I know, man. I know.
Not you really from Georgia, for real. What?
For real. Yeah, for real. Yeah.
Because, see, here's the thing. Like, they play like it's Georgia and Atlanta. Like, no, Atlanta a part of Georgia. I'm just saying.
Yes. I hate that. I'm like, I mean, I live in Atlanta now, but like when I was in Augusta, I would tell people, oh, yeah, I live in Georgia. Oh, so how long have you been in Atlanta? Ain't nobody said anything about Atlanta at that time. I said Georgia.
So I got to ask this first and foremost. So you're from Hinesville, you lived in Augusta, now you're in Atlanta, chasing your dream. So like, what's the difference? Like, is the vibe different?
100%. Like, I was only in Hinesville for like maybe a few years right after I was born. And then I spent the bulk of my life in Augusta. And Augusta, like, is big geographically, right? But like as a city, it's super like homey, it's very cozy, it's super southern and south. All of Georgia is for real, but it's not the same high-paced energy as you get in Atlanta. So I definitely felt it necessary to come to Atlanta just to pursue what I was trying to pursue, right? Like I definitely got my footing in Augusta and I really was able to decide this is what I wanted to do with my life. But Atlanta was where I needed to connect all that. You know what I mean?
Now, yeah. That makes sense. Listen, mm-hmm. and before we really get started, because we're going to get into your music career and we're going to do your official introduction, but Ooh, you got to tell me this. So this HBCU Pulse Radio, and I'm like, listen, like we peasants are out here to Davion. She an R&B, rising R&B superstar. So it's like, why she want to talk to the HBCU Pulse guy? Then I find out you got a sister that went to an HBCU. Tell us about that real quick.
Yeah. So shout out my sister, Devin. She went to Albany. So she went to Albany State. Yeah, I know. And before I decided when I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do, college or just pursue music, like it never gave like PWI. It always gave HBCUs. So I just love HBCUs. I have my sister. She's an alum. And I don't know. It's just super important to me because HBCUs are so like imperative for like our community and like our education and like us identifying the roots and like the beginning so that we can figure out where we're going. You don't get that from other institutions. So I'm always a big fan and like a lot of the sauce comes from HBCUs. You know what I'm saying? Like all the sauce be coming from the young, fresh Black talent, Black individuals, like communities. And I'm just like always been a fan of the culture.
Now, I see, listen, Devon, listen. Now, I don't wear glasses, so I remember I went to go see Ant-Man and the Wasp. I got 3D glasses, all right?
Hey.
So I got to put them on and take off my glasses. Your sister went to where? I'm a Fort Valley State University alumni.
Yeah.
I'm a Fort Valley State alumni. Wait a minute.
Yeah, she graduated. I want to say, like, I could be off. Maybe, like, 2015, 16, I think, is what her graduation year. But, yeah, shout out to my sis.
Now, I don't know if you know this, but listen, Fort Valley and Albany, we got a little school rivalry.
A little rivalry action.
Yeah, you mm-hmm. know, Albany State, it's all love. But I'm just, like, Albany, I'm thinking she went to, like, the Clark Atlanta.
Albany, yeah.
I know. Like, your sis gonna see this be like, man, he ain't, but this ain't gonna be bad. He went to Fort Valley.
Nah, she actually was a mass comm major, so she actually loved, like, all of the interviews and the press, like, everything. She's so excited to listen to this.
I love it. But real talk, like, we love Albany State. Albany is an amazing school. The biggest HBCU in Georgia, like, 5,000, 6,000 students. So it's all love until it's that Fountain City Classic because we're going to get our win back. But that's not what we're here for, all
right?
We're
going to
get our win
right.
back for sure.
I tell you
why. But anyway, listen, Davion, it's amazing to have you on. So first and foremost, we're already having fun, but let everyone know who you are for those that don't know.
Yes. So, hey, everybody. I am Davion. I am a 24-year-old Grammy-nominated singer-songwriter from Augusta, live in Atlanta. And I'm just out here just doing my thing, trying to make my impact on the music scene, the R&B scene, alternative R&B scene. I'm making changes one in the ocean, one ripple, one wave at a time. That's what I'm doing.
Hey, listen, you doing it. You got your EP, Good Grief. Like I told you, I'm not fake when it comes to, like, folks that come on the show. I really watch the movies. I really listen to the music. I really do that. And, like, when I listen to Good Grief, it really put me back in the mind. I was telling you about it off mic about right. how when I was at Fort Valley, like, it was, like, one of my first few weeks. It was, like, September 2015. And Bryson Tiller came up, Miss Ellis, who's a radio legend in Georgia. She brought up for the radio station, she brought up Bryson Tiller. And this was right before Trap Soul came out. Only really Don't was out. Don't, and I think maybe Overtime, like the different songs like that, like different singles. So we didn't really know who Bryson Tiller was. So we went. It wasn't a lot of folks that were there because it was a rainy day. And then it was like, who's this Bryson Tiller dude? We don't know him.
Yeah.
And literally, we were there. The next week, like Trap Soul comes out and he blows up.
That's so how it goes,
So I'm just saying, like, we got you here, and I'm listening to Good Grief, and I'm not even going to lie to you. Like, when I heard Don't that morning. Like, I was like, who is Bryson Tiller? So I listened to Don't. I wake up, like, 4 in the morning, and I turn on Don't, and I'm like, nah, this the one. This the guy.
Yeah.
So I got that same feeling listening to Good Grief. So I'm really excited to really get into your background and your journey. So we got to start with this. Like, when did you first grow your love for music? Because when I listen to Good Grief and your other music, I hear a love. So when did you first like grow your love for music?
Man, like I was watching this Breakfast Club interview with Vince Staples recently, and he made a really good point of like, when do you fall in love with your mom, right? Like, when do you, like, it's something that's so innate. Like, when do you first do it? Like, when do you first realize? And I feel that way about music. It's like, I don't know when I first fell in love with music, because I've always had this very special connection to music. I felt like I came out the womb singing. Like, people come out the womb crying, and I was just, like, busting a note or something. I felt like that was me. Like, that's, but I know that I felt more drawn to it when I grew up in church. I'm a PK, so I definitely felt pulled in that direction when I would go to church Sundays and Wednesdays. And I'm just like, man, like, this is really a tool. Like, this is really something that I could, like, do and do it well and, like, express and communicate and, like, touch and reach. And so I definitely have always felt connected, and I've always loved music. And I'm so happy that you can even hear the love in the music, because I truly love songwriting and making music. But I definitely would say it goes back to, like, early on when I grew up in church and praise and worship was going on, and I'm like, yes, like, this is really it, and all these things. So definitely around then.
So it's interesting, because when I listen to your music, it sounds very contemporary, because I bring up Bryson Tiller. Like, when I heard Don't, when I heard Trap Soul, like, just the beat selection was so different, and you heard a different vibe than what traditionally R&B is. And I think that 40 that does the collaboration with Drake, I feel like he ushered it in. It was Usher, right? Ushered it in a little bit.
Sure.
Like, just that didn't come on purpose. That was my mistake. But I'm like, you know what?
Hey, but I think that's it, for sure. That's how it
is. Yeah, like that type of sound. So, like, I know for me, like, your music sounds very contemporary R&B, but, like, what are your influences?
Man, so this question is always so interesting to me, because as I mentioned before, like, I grew up in church, so I wasn't really, like, exposed to a lot of secular music at all growing up. A lot of the OGs and, like, the people that are, like, super, like, I know and love now and respect now for their contribution, I got put onto them later in life. I wasn't really listening to them earlier on. So I didn't even realize, like, when people are like, oh, like, what are your influences? And, like, you have very unique tone. Like, where'd that come from? And things like that. I'm like, honestly, I did listen to Corinne Bailey Rae. She's like an R&B kind of folk singer from the UK, which I definitely contribute my approach to, because she's not even from the States. So her sound is just, it's super, like, left field in general. But I think a lot of it was just me just figuring it out. Like I said, I didn't really have that many people to listen to aside from, like, worship and gospel, you know what I'm saying? And I don't necessarily, like, fall in those lanes sonically now. So, and I didn't even realize I had, like, an interesting voice or whatever until I started putting music on SoundCloud, and then it was like, oh, the voice. So I definitely love Corinne Bailey Rae, and I definitely attribute a lot of my, like, vocal approaches to her. But other than that, I was just, it was me, my guitar, and my microphone, just figuring it out, you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
So, listen, you said that we got gospel. You, like, you didn't really listen to a lot of secular music. So you gotta let me know your top gospel artists, though, because, like, listen, HBCUs, like, tapped in. Like, a lot of HBCUs
I don't want to be cliche, but, like, tired of it. You know what I'm saying? I love Israel Houghton. I love Hillsong, which is, like, a worship group. And my dad, he also listened to, like, a lot of CHH, so, like, Christian hip-hop. Like, that gave a lot growing up. So, like, Endymion and Bizzle and people like that, which is, like, if you look like, huh? But, like, if...
No, hey, listen, how life be right now, like, when you're in college, you got to listen to some William Murphy, all right? You got to listen to Ty Trippett. So I'm just saying, I know what's up.
Nah, yeah, but I'd say later on, as I began to, like, cultivate my own sound and, like, my own discography of, like, my favorites, Eric Badu is, like, one of my tops. I love Frank Ocean, Tyler, the Creator. I love Tame Impala, like, Blood Orange, the more alternative music. And for a long time, I struggled with, like, labeling myself as an R&B singer because I love so many other genres. So I definitely feel like I land more in the alternative R&B space because I could really pull from wherever, right? But those are some of my faves. And Solange. Love her.
Listen. Hey, I see it. So let's talk about this, right? So I'm doing research on you because that's what MassCom majors do. I know your sister being a graduate, a MassCom graduate of a University System of Georgia school. Listen, Fort Valley, Albany, Savannah State, we like family. So it's a situation where we all really be in the same boat and we really take this seriously and we really get our degrees, right? So like I'm doing my research based with this University System of Georgia education from Fort Valley. And I come across this article in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution when you were talking about good grief, and you talked about the grief you were feeling from a year-long relationship. And in that article, you touched on therapy and how your therapist helped you confront your grief. And that's big for me. The number one, I got therapy tomorrow, all right? I got therapy tomorrow at
11:30. Love that for you, King, 100%, yeah.
So I'm just saying, therapy means a lot to me. So I want to just ask you, because you were open and talking about that, like how important is your journey to mental health and wellness when it comes to the construction of your music?
Honestly, there's such a correlation between the two. Like, they're so intertwined because for me, like, the songwriting process almost always starts with journaling. Like, I always, like, need to figure out what I'm feeling or, like work through certain emotions so that I can figure out where the music is going to take me and things like that. And during that time, because, like, that was, like, 2021, 2020-ish, during that time, it was like there were so many new emotions and so many things that I just didn't even understand. And that was like my first real heartbreak. So I'm like, boohoo, I'm just a sad girl. So I'm just like, nah, I got to figure this out. And that was like my outlet was to like make the music. And even when you touched on the therapy topic, like I was in therapy at the time, just working through some things. And then I happened to have a breakup at the same time. So I was working through more things. And my therapist was actually the one who planted the seed that I was grieving, because a lot of times you don't correlate or even associate grief with a breakup. It's just like, this is just something that happens. But it's like, your body can't always tell the difference between a physical death and like the death of like a relationship or like a phase in your life or the death of a past you. So it's like, you still have to go through all these phases and stages in order to come to accept that this is not even a thing anymore. So it wasn't until like almost a year later that it really settled in my spirit. And I was like, nah, like this is something that I want to create a world around and I want to open up a dialogue around. And I think that I'm so grateful because music allows me to cope and process my feelings in a digestible way so that when I have conversations like this, I'm not overwhelmed by the emotions that I felt 2 years ago. You know what I mean? Like, so they're paralleled 100%.
So one thing I read as well when you were in that, when it was the Atlanta Journal-Constitution article, is about journaling. You talked about how journaling was really that first entry for you in the music. So talk about that level of journaling and writing your experience down and what that turned into.
Yeah. So I've always journaled, like, when I was growing up and we went to church Sunday service, my mom would give us these like journals or like little books so that we could take notes. She was like, y'all not just gonna sit through this service. Y'all gonna learn something. So we would take journal like notes and things like that. And my journal went from like notes about the service to like introspective thoughts that I was having about life and myself. And like, and then it turned into like, okay, well, maybe there's a song in this. And then it turned into like songs. So it was a really natural kind of like evolution of like one thing to the next. And yeah, like journaling is so keen for me when it comes to making music, because I'm not the kind of person that makes music that's like just gonna like sound good and that's it. Like, I want to talk about something, I want to touch topics, you know. This project in particular, once I get to the end of this project, I want to experience some type of resolve, some type of healing. And I think that the best way for me to get there to that place and even to make the music is to even know how I'm feeling. There's so many times that we as songwriters and creatives, whatever the medium, we let virality and things like that kind of put pressure on us when we're making music. Like, oh, I can't really dive into this because it might be too deep. Or like, I don't know if it's going to take well because it's not like what's, you know, like the status quo. And so I don't let any of that really infiltrate my mind when I'm making music, because that's a really sacred process for me. And it starts with extreme vulnerability, and it's all throughout good grief, for real.
Don't go anywhere.
Y'all ain't know why, right?
Yeah. HBCU Pulse Radio will be right back after this commercial break.
What's going on, everybody? Randall Barnes with HBCU Pulse here. And did you know that learning actually has a sound? It's true. Listen. You heard that? That's the sound of learning a new language with Babbel. Sometimes learning a new language can be stressful. It can be overwhelming. And trust me, I know. In high school, I had two Spanish classes I had to take before I graduated from high school. Then when I went to my HBCU, Fort Valley State University, I had to take French. And French was about to take me out because I had to think about so many other majors, so many other things going on campus. I honestly could not catch up. And I had a really good, really cool professor. The classes in the morning too, it was not hitting. But also, you got to look at the fact that you got to go get help. And sometimes finding someone to help you with a new language, it is difficult, man. Folks trying to get how they live. But here's the thing. Look no further, because all you got to do is go to Babbel. You do not have to pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors to try to track someone down. They got an A in the class. You don't got to do that. You don't got to waste no hours on apps to try to figure out how to speak a new language. No, Babbel can do it for you. Babbel's convenient courses have helped me learn real-life conversation skills in a different language. And it's easy to prep for my next trip abroad. When I go outside this summer, I can ask for directions if I get lost. I can order food. I can speak to folks that are going to be selling stuff because I got to get some souvenirs for my parents, for my family. And I don't have to go to my phone. I don't have to go to Google Translate. I don't have to do all these different things. I can just know what's going on. Why? Because I have Babbel. But then again, I also can use Babbel because they also have speech recognition technology that helps you improve your pronunciation and your accent. So if that sounds good to you, like it does to me, you need to download Babbel. Here's a special limited time offer for the HBCU Pulse Radio audience. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription. But only for our listeners, for HBCU Pulse Radio at babbel.com/HBCU. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/HBCU. Spelled BABBEL.com/HBCU. Rules and restrictions may apply, and tell them Randall sent you.
Welcome back. In 4, 3, 2, 1. To HBCU Pulse Radio. The heart of HBCU culture.
It is, and I think that's why I like it, because I know I'm 27, so I'm at a point in time where I'm removed from college. I graduated into COVID, so that comes with a lot of different stuff. I had plans for my life that were halted because of that. And then just like in this industry, in this media industry, that I deny that I'm in, but I'm actually really in sometimes. I'm not like, am I really in the industry? Like, no, we don't say this like Sim. I do this different stuff. I write. So, So it's like, it's heartbreak in different ways. It's heartbreak from 100%. Like friendships and relationships. And when I was listening to Good Grief, like I heard it and I interpreted it in a different way, because I can tell that you really put a lot of real life experience into it. But also it's interesting when you talk about how you didn't listen to a lot of secular music growing up, right? And that's something that is a tenet of R&B, because a lot of times when we say, hey, R&B is changing, it's not what it used to be, we talk about how, hey, a lot of folks aren't in the church anymore. A lot of folks aren't getting that experience singing in the youth choir, leading the song. Like, they're not getting that background, the instrumentation that comes from church, right? So I want to get your take on the R&B industry, because you are in it. So like, do you think that when people say the R&B industry is dying, do you think that's true? Or do you believe that there's another way to look at it and music is just evolving?
I definitely think it's a matter of evolution. Like, I'm a science girlie. Like, if I would have gone to school, I would have been a bio major. Like, I love science. I love like looking at things and changing variables and seeing what this does to this. And it's the same thing with music. It's like, for somebody to say R&B is dead, it's like, that's so not true, right? I think sometimes we're married to a past version of something, or just even sometimes the association, right? Like, there are R&B songs that you can vividly remember playing, like hearing play at your graduation, or like at, you know, your, when you had your first kiss, or like, so there are these really strong emotional memories tied to the music and tied to that era of music. And so I think that sometimes we get so caught up in like, oh, it doesn't feel like this anymore. But rather than it feeling like this, it's more like you were in this place when the music came out. And so I think sometimes we forget that also plays a part. But anything that's alive is growing and changing and evolving. So if music wasn't changing, then we would be in a bad place, honestly, because I think it's rap looks so much different than it did 50 years ago, right? Like rock looks so much different now than it did 50 years ago. Country looks different now than it did 50 years ago. And the same with R&B. So it's like, I think that the newer class of R&B is coming in and shaking the table like, hey, it doesn't have to look like this. It doesn't have to sound like this. It doesn't have to be like this, but it still is this, right? Like it still is R&B. And I think that there's a certain level of bravery that you have to have in order to be like, look, I'm here and I'm taking up this space and I want to be recognized in this space, but in my own way. And I think that I don't even like to say the older like people that came before us, because like they're still here and their contributions are still here. But I think that the way that music is growing from, like the direction it's growing from, I think sometimes it's let us do our thing, because I think sometimes it also helps to get like the cosign that you need to feel comfortable like taking up the space in the genre, like in the R&B genre, when you pay it forward. Like I know, like when I got the cosign from Alicia Keys, I'm like, look, I couldn't have done this without you. Like I couldn't have done this without your contributions. Like I wasn't allowed to listen to too much growing up, but no one was playing through our house all the time at all times. So it's like, even stuff like that, like, I'm like, when you recognize where you're coming from and who came before you and pay it forward, I think sometimes it helps other people to understand and like, I don't know, appreciate the evolution, but it's just that evolution and everything's going to evolve.
Yeah. So what does your songwriting process look like? Because just like I said, it's interesting how you interpret and put in your real life experiences into the music, and you come from a gospel background, like non-secular music is gospel. And you talk about Ty Tribbett and these other artists that inspired your artistry from a young age. Then you go into Erykah Badu, really an artist that isn't a gospel artist, but like you have Other Side of the Game, like where she really is talking about stuff in a different way, on. She's talking about stuff in a different way. So like when it comes to your songwriting process, like what is that like?
I think for me, the songwriting process is I've gotten to a place because I've been recording and making music for like the past decade, which is crazy to say, but like I started when I was like 13, 14 and like started putting myself on wax, like recording myself. And the first few years I started recording, it was very like trial and error. And I was just trying to find the songwriting method that worked for me. But as time progressed, I really found that for me, the best way for me to make music in the most authentic and organic way is to freestyle. Like, I can't remember the last time I wrote something down because I can't overthink it. Like, I need to get out of my head and into my idea. And I overthink a lot. I think as creatives, right? Like, we have such creative minds and we can make something out of nothing, but we can also make something out of nothing, right? Like in the negative sense. So I really think it's important for me to not bring that energy into the booth when I'm recording. So usually I'm just going where the wind blows me, and I've made really amazing music that way. And I've got it down to a science to where it's not just willy-nilly. It's like super calculated and precise. But yeah, for the most part, I'm just freestyling, just whatever comes to my mind and heart, melody-wise and lyric-wise. But again, that origin is always going to come from something I journaled earlier, or like a feeling that I've been pondering on or something like that.
So I'm on your Instagram, right? And I was preparing for this interview. And 5 days ago, you posted the cover of J. Cole's Might Delete Later. And sure you did. Said being a part of hip hop history again is gangsta. And you said, so blessed to have been able to contribute to this amazing song and legendary moment for the culture. So you got to tell us real quick before we talk about the songwriting stuff. We're going to talk about the J. Cole Revenge of the Dreamers 3 camp in Atlanta. But Might Delete Later just dropped. It's a topic of conversation for a lot of things that we ain't going to talk about, because we're not talking about rap. We talking about R&B. All right. So we're not going to talk about that. But like, talk about that moment, because like, it looks like you worked on Pricey.
Yeah, Pricey. I worked on the hook for that song. I guess now it's more of a pre-hook, but yeah. So funny story, right? So Revenge of the Dreamers 3 happened 2019, January. December 2019, I was in Raleigh at Cole's house recording stuff with him, like working. Yeah. So that's when we worked on the hook that would become Pricey. So this has been like a seed that had been sown years prior. But yeah, honestly, like that for me was just so like, I always like think about who I was and how I was in 2019 and like who I am now, present day in 2024. And I'm like, I was just so like shocked that my presence was requested in that room, right? Like even like now I think about it, I'm like, what the heck? Like I was like 19 at the time, I was 19. And yeah, it was really an amazing environment. T-Minus, the producer, he was there. Mez, who was on the song Sleep Deprived that made the Revenge album, he was also there helping write the hook. And it was a super, like, I'm so blessed that it was a super chill environment where, like, I wasn't able to be super nervous because the energy in the room was so welcoming. And I think that also helps a lot when you talk about wanting to, like, extend the olive branch to the next generation, right? Like, you have to create an atmosphere where they feel comfortable and confident enough to be their best. So it was really cool. That energy was made for me. And yeah, wrote the Pricey hook with Mez and Cole. And then I cut it, so I recorded it on the song. And then, boop, the rest is history. Came out last week.
Okay. I love it. So I'm looking here. So climbed out the Great Ville, that's gangster. Miss Mills to make Mills. Now that's gangster. So that was you that came up with that? Uh-huh. Okay. How you came up with that? That's fine. How you came up with that?
Yeah. So it was so long ago, but I remember like we were working on a song and we were talking about like things that are gangsta, but like a lot of people see like being gangsta as like there's a negative connotation behind what that word means in our community. And so, like, we were like, okay, so what is gangsta? Like, taking care of your family, coming back and investing in your community, buying the block back and things like that, and missing meals, like, going without for that delayed gratification. Like, that's gangsta. Like, all these things. It was more of a conversation. And we found a way to piece it together in the hook to where it came out today. And I cut the demo, and Ari killed it. Ari Lennox did her big one, and I just couldn't be happier.
Listen, that missed meals to make meals, that's gangster. Like, hey, that's a bar for real.
I'm saying,
because
right?
Sometimes you got to struggle before you come up. You know what I mean? So, hey, listen.
100%. You got to stay down till you come up. And sometimes that's hard, and not everybody has that in them.
Yeah. Not everybody has it, but sometimes it's forced upon you sometimes. Like, where it's like, it gets tough, it gets challenging. So, you got to come up. And then when you up, so it's like, I feel that in a different way. I feel that. You have no idea how I really feel that.
Look, I feel you because I think that, I'm kind of going to segue here, but I think that sometimes the artistry, songwriting, like lifestyle is glamorized in a way that if you weren't in it, you won't understand. It's really not as glamorous as it's portrayed to be. So even being able to be a part of like a line like that or a hook like that, it's like, you have one of the biggest rappers of our generation saying like, look, this was my experience and this is something that I had to go through. And like, this is something that is my real life experience. And I sometimes, even like his song Love's Yours, like when he was talking about there's no such thing as a life that's better than yours. And sometimes he thinks being broke is better, not because of the being broke aspect, but because the genuine and the love and like the appreciation that you have. And it's like, this is like a theme that he's always had in his music. J. Cole has always had this kind of theme in his music. So I feel, yeah, sometimes artistry is glamorized and rightfully so, right? Like we have brands and we have, you know, these things and things like that, but it's like, it get real. And unless you don't know. So yeah.
Hey, listen, that's a big thing. Cause I'm a J. Cole guy because when I was in high school and even in college, it was J. Cole and Big Crit. Like Big Crit's my favorite rapper. So
hard. Yes.
Yeah. Like, and then he can give you like a radio type of song, but then he does The Vent. He does Bury Me and Go. He does Price of Fame. Mm-hmm. Like that's what I respected with Crip because my childhood was different. Middle class environment, you know, trying to make my way, trying to fit in an environment where I didn't fit in. You got Big Crit that's coming out doing it a different way. And then channeling Pimp C and then channeling Outkast and all these different artists. So like, I know for me, being a Big Crit guy and a J. Cole guy, I look at that artist and that songwriting different. And well, like when J. Cole did Crooked Smile, we knew what it was. You know what I'm saying? Back 100%, in the day.
Yeah, 100%. Nah, you really hit the nail on the head, because that's literally, especially Crit, like she's always going to like not just give you a song that sounds good, but like throw something in there that's going to let you know, like, I understand what I'm talking about. I lived it. And this is like, this is more like a blueprint for the next. And like, I love that in the music. I live for that. And I try to emulate that in my own music, in my own way.
I want to say that, like, the fact that people know who Big Crit is out here makes me happy. Because I used to be feeling like, y'all don't know who Crit is? I'm like, what y'all do? I was in college. I'm like, man, Big Crit, my favorite rapper. Now what? They're like, no, yeah. Big Crit tough. I'm like, oh, for real? Y'all like Crit tough?
I'm saying, yeah. And that's, again, when I go back to like the whole sentiment of like, R&B is dead or like real rap is dead. I'm like, no, you just don't have your ear to the ground for real. Like, there's so many artists. I ran out of characters on Twitter. Like, somebody tried to do the whole male R&B is dead. And I put a whole, I'm talking like 20, 30, 40 names just of like all the best R&B artists that I could think of with the amount of space that I had. And people were like, oh my God, I didn't even know these people. Exactly. Like, we're here, they're here, we exist. And we're making strides to break that barrier. But just because you don't know certain people are like moving and shaking, it doesn't mean that they're not moving and shaking. Like, yeah.
People don't know what they talk about on Twitter all the time, or X now, whatever they call it now. They don't know. So, Twitter. Like, I'm just saying, like, listen, like, it's Twitter, X, whatever. People still don't know.
Yeah.
But no matter what, they still don't know what they be talking about on there. Folks just be talking. But
yeah.
We got to talk about this, though, because you talked about earlier the Alicia Keys co-sign. So you got to tell us about just the connection with Alicia Keys and your involvement in the She Is The Music songwriting camp. Because when I learned about that, I'm like, I see the vision. I see that next level type of vibes. You got to tell us about that.
My brain explodes every time I just think about my life and things that have happened, because I'm like, that's so crazy. Like, it was so random and in the best way. Like, I think it was 2022, top of 2022, like January, February. And I get a DM from Benta. Her name is Benta. And I was on tour with a singer named Baby Rose right before the pandemic happened. And then the pandemic happened and we had to end the tour early. And so she was going to see me at the West Coast leg of the show, but she hadn't had a chance. Benta hadn't had a chance to see me. But like, she had always kept her eye on me and just was watching and supporting from afar. So I guess this opportunity came across her desk and I was like the first person she thought of. And she was like, look, there's this songwriting camp Alicia Keys does through She Is The Music. I'm telling you, I'm going to send you the deck, send you all the information. You got to like just check it out. And I'd love to have you in LA for like a week to do this camp. So I'm like, songwriting camp, Alicia Keys, yes, because amazing things always come out of songwriting camps that are in alignment with what I have going on. And like what I like to be a part of. So I'm like, automatically, I'm like in my mind, yes. But then I get the email and the deck and it's for like a documentary. So it's a documentary that starts about the songwriting camp and just like, you know, the women that were included in the songwriting camp and things like that. So automatically, I'm like, absolutely, yes, I'm down. I get there, I go to LA, do the camp 4 or 5 days. Meet amazing people, amazing women. It was an all-women camp, women producers, engineers, writers, like even the entire camera crew for the documentary, all women. Like, and I was so amazing because I had never really been a part of anything like that before. But yeah, so I think when that happened, I was like, yo, this is so amazing just to be a part of this moment. And even if it was just the documentary about the camp and my experience in the camp, that would have been amazing. But then a couple of weeks later, I get a call from Beth, which is the director of the documentary. And she's like, look, what would you think if the documentary was about you? Like, if it was about you and like two other women, like if we just followed you and like your artistry and like what that looks like, an up and coming singer, writer, and your journey and your struggles and your triumphs, what would you think? I'm like, you want the documentary to be more so focused on me and my journey? And this is Alicia Keys we're talking about? Like, please, yes. So that was an amazing experience. And it premiered at Tribeca Film Festival last year. It was so amazing. It was so much fun. And just to be on somebody's radar like Alicia Keys is crazy. But then to also be like brought in by her and co-signed by her and like supported by her is just like, it just reaffirms what I've been like telling myself for all these years, which is like, I got it. Like, I got this. And so I think it's so important to just, like I said, extend the olive branch so that the next wave of newness can come in with confidence because we have the support of the people who paved the way. So I'm just happy to be here, man. Like, for real.
Listen, I love that. And I think that's something that when HBCU students hear this, because when you have folks at HBCUs, like, they really be rapping, they really be singing. Like, you go to these talent shows.
Yeah.
You go to these talent shows, and you have so many folks that really have, like, talent for real. And you have, like, artists like a Bryson Tiller that comes on campus. I remember my junior year at Fort Valley, we had Young Blue came on campus. Now what I will say, because this has been at this point 7 years, I felt like, because we had Young Blue, he came into our calf. And, like, our calf now is nice. Our calf now is nice. But hey, I just saw it for homecoming last year. But, like, the calf we had, it was cool and all. But that's like Young Blue, the Young Blue that got the Drake feature a couple years later. So Young Blue come in with the chain on, he had the Boosie cosign, and I felt like it was like, he performing in the cafeteria. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Hey, so but I, you so- know what? All of that matters because, and I that's why I love artists coming to HBCUs and doing the homecomings and going in and showing things, because it's like a beacon of light. Like, yo, you could do this too. But beyond that, it's like, I won't even say a humbling experience, because that's the one of the realest best experiences you could get, is to, like, touch and reach people that in another life could be you, and vice versa, right? Like, and so it's like, I don't know, I just love that, because it's like, I personally don't ever want to get to a point in my artistry where I'm like, nah, I don't want to, this is the cafeteria of HBC. No, it's the cafeteria of HBCU. Some of the most lit, some of the most, like, fine, some of the most innovative, some of those creative, some of the most, like, business savvy minds are in those cafeterias. And it's like, man, it's an honor to do that. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's such an honor to be able to, like, play your role in history and in the culture, because I don't know, I understand the importance. You know what I'm saying? Like, love it.
Listen, but Damian, I get it, but see, you got to understand that your sister did go to Albany State, so if we put you in the calf, they're going to be like, they put you in the calf. We would have had you in the student center on the West Campus. Like, we got two campuses. They would have been like, Fort Valley's new cafeteria, we got two. Like, so we can't put you in the calf. We got to put you at least in the student center with the Chick-fil-A. You know what I'm saying? Like, we got stuck Bryce Tiller with. We would have put you right where Bryce Tiller sat at.
Yeah. Nah, hey man, they both are equally important.
Yeah, I mean, that's real. But, like, let's talk about this, because, like I said, there's so many, like, amazing artists at HBCUs that are looking to emerge and make things happen. So what are some advice that you would give them? Because I think that when it comes to a lot of HBCU artists, they look at how saturated the industry is. And I think a lot of artists, they're trying to make that TikTok song. They're trying to get that TikTok moment versus really prioritizing the artistry. So, like, what is your advice to them?
Yeah, honestly, like, my advice to anybody who is pursuing creative passion in school, even though I didn't go to school, I understand the importance of balance, time management, vision, all these things, because though I wasn't in school, I was, like, in the school of life. I know that's so corny, but, like, I was learning so much, and I was learning how to be an adult and be an artist and be a boss and be, like, all these things at the same time. And honestly, I would say, look, like I was saying earlier, a lot of times we focus on virality and, like, the TikTok ability and all these things, right? And it depends on the kind of artist you want to be, because sometimes the kind of artist you're looking to be is in that realm. And if that's the case, you could do that right from your dorm, right from where you are, right from wherever it is in whatever hall, that you could do that. But I know for me, I wanted to pursue something that had the longevity and that would be able to sustain the test of time. So for me, it's about, like, embracing and even recognizing and identifying your unique path. Like, where do you want to take it so you can figure out the steps you need to take to get there? And then again, about balancing, like, when you're in school, you got classes, you got exams, you got study hall, you got all these things. And it's like, yes, school takes precedence, but not only in school, but once you graduate, you're going to have to learn how to juggle work with life, work with social skills, work with family time. So this is an amazing time for you to learn prioritizing and balancing, right? Like, okay, cool. I need to lock in. And sometimes I might not be able to go to this party, XYZ. I might need to lock in and go to the studio instead. And that's just what it is, because it's like every great person and every great artist and producer and engineer and rapper and anybody understands, like I was saying before, the delayed gratification. You're not going to be able to fit every single thing in, get that schoolwork together. And once you have that extra time, figure out, look, where do I need to go? Who can I connect with in my classes, or who is in my immediate stratosphere that's doing what I'm trying to do? And how can I build my community? How can I network? How can I work with these people and build our portfolios? And once we finish doing XYZ, it's about balancing and prioritizing. You can only do that if you know where you're trying to go. And I know for me, I really had to build my tribe. Like, when I first moved to Atlanta, luckily, bless God, I had been coming here sporadically before I moved here just to plant those seeds and make those friends so that I could have a softer landing, because I understood the importance of community. And luckily for HBCUs and HBCU culture, that camaraderie is built into the DNA of how the schools operate. So, man, find people who, if you're a rapper, or you're a singer, find you an engineer, or find you somebody that can help you work rooms as a potential manager, or find you somebody who is a producer and you guys work together. Issa Rae has this really cool saying, like, network across, don't network up. Like, find your people around you versus trying to hit Metro Boomin on DM. Like, it's not very often that he's gonna see that. You know what I'm saying? Like, so these are all things that I think are super important when you talk about balancing school and balancing career, because you can have both. And I think sometimes we're tricked into just the way society is built, like, oh, you have to put your dreams on hold until you get this done, or you can't be happy for real until you get this degree. No, you can do both. It might be hard. You might have to prioritize and shift focus and, like, duck down on the weekends and lock in and work on your craft versus going to the party that's happening. But it can be done. And that's what I had to do. It just wasn't in the school setting.
Listen, what you said was a word, because you said find the people that are around you. Don't randomly just DM Metro Boomin, because I can tell you right now, I don't know young Metro, but he busy right now, okay?
I'm telling you, that man is busy.
He busy on a couple different ways, if you know what I'm talking about, right? You know, he busy, all right? We still don't trust you, all right? We still don't trust you. That's all I'll say. We still don't trust you, all right? So, like, you better find that person that make beats on your campus, because, like Issa Rae say, we're rooting for everybody black. You better root for
him. I'm telling you, and honestly, like, and that's really, like, I'm telling you, that's really the key for real. It's like, I think that something that I always, and it's, that's why I think, like, being on this platform is just so, like, perfect alignment, because I've always said, like, if I did go to school, it would have been an HBCU, like, no question about it. And I really kind of sometimes, even still to this day, sometimes I get a little sad, because I'm like, I wish I had the opportunity to, like, really, like, connect with, like, people, like, in a very like-minded, super, like, we're in the same place in life, we're in the same place, you know, in school, we're in the same place in just our like past and what we're doing. And, like, there's just so much, like, there's so many parallels that you have when you're in school, and sometimes we don't see the opportunity, but you look now and it's like you see these alums from amazing HBCUs, like, yo, I remember when I was here, and it was just a time where I was able to be a visionary and connect with my peers and, like, take it to the next level. What started off as an idea sprouted into this whole, like, ecosystem of opportunity. So take advantage, because it's really there. It's right under your nose.
Listen, I feel that, because what's interesting, it's so interesting you say that. And we about to close out the interview, but you say that, and I want to give the other side of it, because what you're doing and being in these rooms with, like, a J. Cole and an Alicia Keys and all these amazing artists, that's what we want to be a part of. Because you go to your HBCU and you have this amazing experience, 4 years, however long it is. And what we're there for is ultimately to get that degree. And if you're, like, a mass comm major, a business major, like some art type of major, we're trying to get where you're at. We're trying to get on that trajectory where we're in that industry and we're able to say, hey, this is my job, this is my career, I'm working up to that. These milestones are where we are. So it's like this dichotomy of, like, we wish it could be perfect, because that camaraderie and that experience is important, but we want to get there. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, hey, like, how can I get with Davion at? Because I'm here in the calf, I'm here on the yard, I'm here doing this, and it's fun. But a lot of people, like how I did, you get to your junior year, that second semester, and you like, yo, like in a year, I'm gone. Or if you graduate in December, hey, I'm gone. So like, it's crazy to hear you say that, because it's like the dichotomy of it is like, we want to be you,
and like, I want to be y'all. Yeah. So
that's the part. That's wild. That's wild.
Yeah. It's just because I understand, like, and I think that everybody always wants what you don't have, and you have what you don't want, or whatever, right? Like, this, it's always going to be that kind of, like, theme throughout life. And while I'm so grateful and appreciative for where I am, I know that in a lot of ways, I had to fast forward developmentally a lot because I didn't have that buffer of school and the energy and the community that being in school provides. And so I think that, like, I'm so happy to, like, even have people be like, yo, like, I want to be in this kind of realm that you're in. And, like, I'm so happy to be here. And I plan on busting down all the doors to make that possible. But it's, like, sometimes I think, like, I wish, like, I really do wish. But, like I said, I do understand. Because even taking it back to my sister, Devin, who went to Albany, her and the co-founder of her rideshare app, Jillian, met in Albany. And they're, like, the only independent rideshare app that's like in the Atlanta airport. It's an all women owned rideshare app, all women drivers. It's like so pivotal for the culture right now. And they met, Jillian was Devin's RA at Albany. And it's like, I know, like, if I was in school, I'd be able to, you know what I'm saying? Who knows, right? And it's like, I'm so happy to be where I'm at. But like, I'm saying, I understand the importance of like reaching beside me and pulling these people and growing together, because I don't know where Ice Spice and Riot met, but it's the same vibe. Like, Riot is her producer, and they met. They grew up together, and they were able to build and grow together. And so sometimes it's, like, that energy that I'm like, dang, I wish I had, right? So when I say that, it's more like, y'all, wherever y'all are in school, like, understand that you can, like, the importance, don't ever underestimate the importance of the people beside you. You know what I'm saying? And because that's, like, you're going to look up one day, and if you did it right, if you played your cards right, then you guys are going to be at the winning table that you guys built together. And I love that angle. I love that story. And I'm happy to have the team I have now and the opportunities and the blessings I have now. But sometimes I'm like, dang, crazy. I wish I went to school sometimes.
And I think that level of what college is the community aspect. And I want to ask you this before I ask you this HBCU question that's going to be really fun. But I know for me, so graduating college, I feel like how you feel, because like I'm 27 and I was in college 5 years ago. I'm pushing 30. That's crazy to think about. And like the community of college is affirming, because like you said, you're around people that look like you, especially in HBCU. You're around people that look like you, that care about what you care about, that care about the issues you care about, that are experiencing that. You're in the shared experience of HBCU life, and then specifically at that institution.
Yeah.
But after you graduate, and I say especially as a man that graduates, it's hard to find that level of community, because I know as men, we're closed off in general, but also when you're on that college campus, it's like you walk out and you not really lonely, because you see people, So I want to know from your vantage point, like, how do you build community? What works for you? Because I think that's something that not only college students worry about. There was a young lady that was in Business Insider that graduated from Spelman. She talked about how after she graduated from Spelman, she's broke and lonelier than ever. That's what she said in her article. So she feels this sense a year later, she feels this sense of like, dang, like when I was in college, it was up. I had sisters, but now I'm in this world and I'm lonely. I'm trying to figure the way out. So how do you find community in this industry and in your journey?
Man, honestly, I've always had a love-hate relationship with the word networking, just because sometimes it creates this like idea that you're working. You know what I'm saying? But I would say like these past, I'd say 4 or 5 years that I've just been making music professionally, I truly have understood the power of a good friend. Like I wouldn't have half of the opportunities that I have if it weren't for a friend making a call, hey, come here. Or I wouldn't have half of the memories that I have if it weren't for my friend being like, yo, like what you got going on today? Like come to Piedmont real quick. Like we outside. And it's like, we culturally, like, we are like, we go to the gym inside. We don't, you know what I'm saying? We be watching TV all day. Like, you can't get me off my couch some days. Like, and so we are a very inside, like, kind of group of people. And I think that the best way for me to get out of my shell and the thing that can get me outside and into life and into the sun is if there is a curated energy that I know I want to be in. So it's like, I might go to a situation or like go to a, I don't know, a open mic night. I don't have any intention on singing, but I know it's going to be so many people in the room that are like doing what I'm doing. Or I might want to just be like abreast of who's new and who's up and coming and who's around, right? So I might go, or I put myself in situations where the probability of me bumping into somebody that I'm gonna like is high. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's very rare that you're gonna catch me, like, I don't know, like in somebody's club. You might on occasion, but for me right now, I'm like, okay, I'm writing, I'm singing, I'm trying to, like, you know, become a bigger brand and all these things. Like, I know that for me, like, all of those amazing opportunities stem from amazing friendships. And I think that so many times, like I said, networking is just for me, because it's just like, sometimes it can seem opportunistic and I never want to come off that way because I always want to be genuine. So I think the best way to cultivate friends and tribes is just to put yourself in situations, right? Like, no, it's like when, this is a terrible example, but it works. It's like when people say, like, if you're not gonna find your man, like, sit on the couch. Like, you know what I'm saying? You gotta go to where he is or whatever. It's the same thing with, like, friendships and opportunities. Like, you have to put yourself in the way of the opportunity. You know what I'm saying? So that the opportunity can meet you. And so I think, like, I don't know. I think that's the best way. I hope that answered the question. But I think that for me, like, that's the best thing, is just to get out of your head and get into life, get into rooms, get into studios, get into galleries, get into wherever that you want to, wherever you see yourself being in the future and you're not there yet, put yourself in that room.
Hey, that answered the question perfectly. What you talked about is movement, and you gave an analogy that I can tell you in college don't work out. You can't find your man on the couch. Well, I'm telling you, you can't find him in college either. You can't find your woman in college. Listen.
Hey, y'all heads need to be in them books. We not worried about that.
Listen, we be trying to find our Megan Good. All right, clean up, man. Start the yard. We were trying to find out Zoe Saldana. Y'all were trying to find y'all Devin Miles. You feel me? I know where it is. Sometimes you don't find it. And listen, the Dwayne and Whitley story, that's fiction, all right? That's real fiction, all right? Well, listen, like, they were just in Atlanta, too. That's crazy, right? They were just in Atlanta. No, Clark, Atlanta, so and AC. but let's talk about this, right? So, mm-hmm. So the question I was going to ask you, mm-hmm. is, are you open to performing any HBCUs, especially during homecoming? But you told me that I'll perform in the calf. All right, so it's like clear. It's clear. You want to perform at an HBCU. It's clear.
Let me tell you, I was just talking to a member of my team about this, because I was like, this is just so, like, when I tell you it's the alignment of the stars for me, I had a dream years ago, and I don't have dreams. I'm very much go to sleep, wake up, like, or like, I might have a dream, but I forget it. But I had a dream years ago. I went to a party at an HBCU. And you know how, like, certain things in a dream, but you don't know how you know? I knew I was at a party at an HBCU. And I was, like, going through trying to get a drink or something, just, like, making my way through the crowd. And somebody stopped me, like, oh, like, you're Davion. Like, you that girl from that song. Like, oh, my God, it's going crazy right now. And I'm like, oh, my God, like, y'all listen to my song at the school? Like, that's so cool. And then, like, throughout the dream, like, it just, like, the song, like, went crazy. It's kind of like what you were saying about the Bryson Tiller thing, about, like, how it just, like, crazy. But it was, like, I know that in the dream, like, I was at a party in HBCU, and the students at the school were, like, single-handedly responsible for, like, pushing my song. So I'm, like, yo, like, I'm not saying that's going to happen verbatim, but, like, I've always felt a super, like, a synergy with HBCUs and, like, just the culture and, like, the importance and the education that they bring. But I'm, like, yes, I would love to. Like, oh my gosh. And I know my music is pretty somber and, like, chill, but, like, I feel like there's a space for that. I don't know.
It is. Like, I think that it is, because, like, what I hear, because, like, when you look at, like, Bryson Tiller, when Trap Soul came out, because I know he had that collaboration, because 2017, I was a freshman orientation leader. The song I used to walk to, like, training to was Bryson Tiller and Future from that Khaled album. Like, you probably know what song I'm talking about. Went crazy.
Oh, there. You was there.
Like, Like, I'm talking, like I said, I don't be lying. Like Bryce and Tiller, let me explain. Like look at JB, they going through their thing too. Like, I was a sophomore when I heard that. I'm like, yo, this is crazy. This song, I still listen to it to this day. Like, the beat he let. Right. So it's like, I really was, I was in school when Bryce and Tiller really was like that guy. So, like, it's just, like I said, the dichotomy of it is crazy. And I know that. From an HBCU, like, because I got this Howard jacket on. Like, you go to Howard, you do Yard Fest. Like, that's when you really made it on that level. You go to A&T and you perform at GO at their concert. Yeah. Like that's really when you made it. Or Clark Atlanta, that's really when you made it. So I got to ask you this. I'm going to ask you a twofold question. And you can say Albany. I'm not being a Fort Valley guy, but I don't want you to cheat, because saying Albany is cheating because your sister went there, all right? What? So my first, I got two questions, and then we done, all right? The first question is, give me three HBCUs you could have seen yourself at. And you can say Albany, but you got to give me four if you say Albany.
Okay, no. I won't say Albany. I definitely wanted to go to Spelman or Clark Atlanta at one point, like, definitely, because I knew I wanted to be in Atlanta. So I'm like, okay, I could pursue music and be in school. So those two for sure. And I don't know. I'm not saying Albany. Because that's all Georgia. So I do want to venture out.
You can easily say Fort Valley. You can say Fort Valley if you want to. I'm just saying.
You know what? I'm going to give Fort Valley a day one up. We could do that. Okay. You know what I'm saying? Because you a great, well-rounded guy. So I'm like, man, period. If that's the energy that's welcome there, then they would welcome me there. You see what I'm saying? And that's awesome.
Listen, if you were on the yard when I was on the yard, like I'm telling you, like I would have been the manager. We would have been like, yo, you about to go up. we about to get this money, Devion. Like, what you mean? Like, we out here. You feel what I'm saying? So listen, hey, what you said, Howard makes a lot of sense. Honestly, I definitely see you.
Yeah, that was up there in the conversation.
I see you. I definitely see you at Clark Atlanta. Like, when I saw your like your vibe and just all the stuff you did, I'm like, that's for sure Clark Atlanta. Like, yeah, that's like that 20 years from now. That's like that 20 years from now, you Google Clark Atlanta and notable alumni come up. Yeah, Devion. That's what we all want.
Maybe they'll give me like my honorary degree once I get my Grammy or something. We'll see. Hey. I don't know.
Listen, Usher came to Clark Atlanta. He was on that Super Bowl stage and he was down at Clark Atlanta like 2 days later. They had a whole time thing for him. So, I mean, listen, that could be a moment.
We don't look back on this moment and be like, oh.
I love it. So, last question. So, like, you said Clark Atlanta. You said Howard. You said Spelman. So, that's the AUC when it comes to Clark Atlanta and Spelman, right? So, like, do you have, like, a preference of, like, HBCUs you want to perform at? Because I know I can see you, like, I know A&T, North Carolina A&T, like, their homecoming goes up, Hampton, Howard, of course, like if I got to put Fort Valley in there, because we be needing the concert, you probably can bring the concert to us, Albany State, too, Albany be going up, Rick Ross went to Albany, Albany be going, so, like, what's some places that you could see yourself performing at in the future?
Man, no, you just named a good handful, like, all the schools that I'd say I want to go to, right, so Clark, Spelman, even like, because I could even see myself performing at like Morehouse. I know it's like an all guy school, but like some of my best collaborators are men. I would love to just curate a vibe there. And a lot of my homies went to Morehouse. So like, it's just going to be so much love there. I don't know. Of course, Howard. I'm trying to think. And then there's, you know what? You said A&T, didn't you?
North Carolina A&T, yeah. Greensboro.
Yeah, because Cole, that would be crazy. Just that community in North Carolina would be insanity. Yeah, I can see those vibes really welcoming me. But honestly, like, I'll go wherever I'm welcome. I'm saying, like I said, I just have such a love for HBCUs because I was talking to my sister, you know, about doing this interview, and she was like, man, like, the love she has for HBCUs runs so deep because she was explaining to me, like, a lot of the history she learned just about, like, our history. She was like, I had never heard any of that until I stepped foot into Albany. And it's like, that's so important. Like, sometimes for us and our identity, it's hard for us to place and make sense of the world unless we know where we came from. So for a school to be dedicated and for HBCUs to be dedicated to, like, giving context to, like, our humanity, it's, like, so, it's important work. And I'm just like, look, and whatever way Lil Devion can contribute, I want to do just that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to do that. So yeah.
Hey, I love it. I want to say that, like, I feel like you and your sister, like your sister really got you tapped in. Cause for real, like, no joke, like, you look at Albany State's history. Yeah, the history is beautiful. You look at, like, the history of how you have Joseph Winthrop Holly that established Albany State. Like, yeah. It's like, yo, like, just the history of it and what it grew into, and just like just the resilience of Albany State. So, like, you got it in your family for sure. So, like, and I love it. Like, you. Life.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you really like that. Like, you really, like, you in the HBCU family, no matter what. I don't care.
I'm an honorary, you know what I'm saying? I feel like I'm an honorary member. You know what I mean? Like, I hate to give myself that title, but I really do feel like that.
No, you are. I'm telling you, especially when you win that Grammy. All right, you better not forget.
We claim that. Yes, God.
Listen, if J. Cole want to go on an HBCU tour, tell him come to Fort Valley and Albany and Savannah State. Turn us up. All three. Like, might as well. And then on top of that, we can put on top of that, he go to Savannah State, we can talk to Shannon Sharp, get him on Club Shay. We can
do that. Okay, Club Shay, man. I want to be there for that.
Listen, that interview, after that cat interview, we don't know what could happen on Club Shay.
Man, that's how then, man.
Yeah, hey, Savannah State doing this thing. Listen, like I said, it's all Fort Valley, Albany, Savannah. Really all the Georgia HBCUs.
Yeah.
But those three, like, we tight because we're the only three public HBCUs in Georgia, so it's tight like that. To everybody,
making it happen.
So before we go, you gotta let us know where we can follow you and what you have coming up, because you have this great story. Like, you're just a great person, energetic person. So it's like, we want to support folks like you that are making it happen. And like I said, that Bryson Tiller moment, when people see this interview, you already gonna be popping. So now we got to see what's going on, how we can support you. So I want to know, where can we find you on social media, where can we find Good Grief, and also how can we just support you in your journey?
Oh my gosh, thank you. So first and foremost, you guys can follow me literally everywhere at Davion Music. So it's Davione Music, literally everywhere. And I definitely, my EP Good Grief just came out in February. So I definitely am just working the project right now and making space for it to just do what it needs to do. We just announced today that there's a it's called Femme It Forward. So it's like a program through Live Nation. And they have this new mentee mentor program called Muse. And I was paired with this amazing, like, Grammy Award winning, like, platinum plaque songwriter named Jazzy. She's fire. She wrote, like, Billy Ray Cyrus's verse on Old Town Road. She wrote Virgo's Groove. Like, she's a heavy hitter. And she's my mentor. So I'll be songwriting a bunch more. And, like, you guys stay tuned to see me get more songwriting credits and just explore more as a songwriter. And yeah, and just stay tuned because more music on the way, prayerfully, soon. But hey, that's pretty much all.
Yeah, listen, it's up and it's stuck. You're making it happen. Listen, Davion, we proud of you. You're part of the HBCU family. Shout out to your sister. Shout out to everything that you're doing. And we tapped in. Listen, hey, the HBCU Pulse Radio family and just the HBCU family in general is tapped in. And we're proud of you. Keep grinding and doing your thing. You're listening to HBCU Pulse Radio.
Thank you.
Like what you hear?
Yeah.
Subscribe to HBCU Pulse Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Also, head to HBCUpulse.com to stay up to date on what's going on in the HBCU community. Thank you for listening to HBCU Pulse Radio.